Elliot Friedman. He joins us now. He's a presentation of Maui Jim Sunglasses. The view is better from here. Elliot, once again, welcome to the program. It is me with no Andrew Walker, who I'm sure you saw on television last night. Are you surprised, sir?
I wouldn't say I'm surprised. I would say I'm more disappointed. My father had a saying, if you're well enough to go out, you're well enough to go to school or work the next day. You know, this is his job, not gallivanting on Canucks Jets broadcasts. And the other thing I would say is that I don't profess to tell Greg McEwen how to do his job, but I would say this, if he goes and works on the TV show and can't show up for his regular duty, I think he should be suspended from the TV show.
And maybe he's just out with a hair injury after what we saw last night on that broadcast.
Yes, he really spent, I bet you, like, there are people, like, brides at their weddings who haven't spent as much time in the chair as he did yesterday.
That's accurate. And he's on his way to Detroit here overnight, so he's coming to your neck of the woods. If you want to head down for the Thanksgiving Day affair in Detroit, maybe you'll see him there.
Is that what he's doing?
He is.
I got to tell you, these sports radio stations are amazing. Nobody works. Like, I go on in Calgary, and either Moldberg or Warner or Pinder, they're off. And I come on your show, and Walker's there, like, half the time. I'm going to have to get a job in sports radio because, evidently, expected productivity is much lower.
Well, I've got an opening the next couple of days, but chances are you're not going to be able to fly out here in time. Speaking of openings, they made one in Edmonton earlier today. Todd McClellan is out. Ken Hitchcock is in. The real question in all of this, Elliot, how much lease does Peter Chiarelli have left?
Look, it's to the end of the year, and then everything is up for debate. There's no question about that. I think the only thing about, you know, Chiarelli is, if this doesn't work and it really goes off the road, do they allow him to make any deals before the deadline? That's going to be the big question. But it's pretty obvious that they're trying to get to the end of the season, see if they can make the playoffs. Look, Ken Hitchcock's history is pretty simple. He has a short-term burst. He's had it almost everywhere he goes, and he would have had it in Dallas last year if Ben Bishop hadn't gotten hurt. And I think that's kind of where we are. They're hoping that jolt he brings teams, he can provide to the Oilers. And if he does it, then everybody probably survives. If he doesn't, then all bets are off. But, you know, the thing I do really believe, though, Scott, is that if they were going to fire Todd McClellan, it was going to be for somebody who could do it this year. They were not going to give up on this season, and there's a long history between Bob Nicholson and Peter Chiarelli and Ken Hitchcock.
And is this as simple as playoffs or bust, Elliot? Like, is that the measuring stick, or are there going to be another bunch of factors involved?
I think that's a big measuring stick. You know, last year I thought when I heard Chuck Fletcher, he just had to make the playoffs. And he did make the playoffs, and then they got wiped out by Winnipeg, and everything changed. So it's difficult to say with certainty. Sometimes, you know, the bar moves, and God only knows what that can mean. I think this was a situation where get to the playoffs, and then everybody's probably safe. But as I learned last year, if you get to the playoffs, you get clobbered in the first round, an owner reserves the right to change his mind.
As you just pointed out, this was going to be a move that was only for this year. So names like Joel Quenneville, Alain Vigneault, they weren't even in the mix because those guys aren't taking that kind of job. When do Joel Quenneville and Alain Vigneault become serious coaching candidates once again?
The interesting thing about all of this, Scott, is as I was doing, I'm headed to a charity event tonight, but I was doing some of the research. This year is shaping up to be a little bit unusual in one sense, and that is, if you look, the most coaching changes in any one season this decade is 7, and it was, I think it was 10-11, I don't have it in front of me, but it was 7, and in that situation, 6 of the 7 teams hired a coach that was there next year. It's if you go back, I think there was a year in the 2010s where there were 8 changes, and I believe 7 of those 8 were guys who were kept the next year. So a lot of the time, teams do try to hire somebody who will be the permanent person. This looks rare. We've got a situation in Edmonton where they've said they're going to look at it at the end of the year. They've got a situation in L.A. where they've said they're going to look at it at the end of the year. Today, while saying he was throwing his full support behind Craig Berube, Doug Armstrong said, you know what, we're going to take a look and see what's out there. We're going to do an in-depth search. The only guy so far, Chicago, has committed, they say, to Jeremy Culleton. I mean, there's no security in this job, but it sounds like Stan Bowman really believes in him, so he's got the job. What this says to me is there's going to be a big race at the end of the season to see where a lot of people stand. I think you're going to see these teams do a lot of due diligence in terms of where's Quenneville willing to go, where's Vigneault willing to go, but also I think they're going to search and do some research on other names, guys that necessarily wouldn't jump to the top of your list. And you know, one of the teams I understand was when San Jose hired Peter DeBoer, apparently they interviewed a ton of people just to find out what's out there. And I know on one of your shows the other day you had Katie Crawford on to talk about coaching millennials and working with millennials. That's going to be a big one, Scott, is can you find somebody who can reach the younger generation? And that's why I won't be surprised. You take a look this year. The Rangers hired a college coach. The Stars hired a college coach. Philadelphia hired a college coach. Detroit had hired a college coach. Some of those situations have gone better than others, but I think it shows you how a lot of these teams are thinking. Who can reach the next generation? And I think that's going to be a lot of the conversation in these teams over the next little while.
Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night in Canada and Sportsnet. Of course, 31 Thoughts. He's a presentation of Maui Jim. The view's better from here. A little closer to home. I'm not sure we thought we'd be having another Sam Gagner conversation as it relates to the Vancouver Canucks, but here we are. He's back with the Canucks after lacing them up last night. What does his camp want to happen from this point forward?
I think it's just simply give him an opportunity to play in an offensive situation. Can he be on your power play? Can he, offensive zone draws, stuff like that. And it also benefits Vancouver to do the same thing. If Sam Bennett is not going to play for you, then what's the point of having him burn a $3 million hole in Toronto for the Marlies? It doesn't make any sense. If the Canucks don't believe that Sam Gagner can help them anymore, at least put him in a situation where he can succeed so that maybe somebody else who's looking for offense can say, okay, we'll take the chance. What benefits Sam Gagner also benefits the Canucks, because either he's going to score or you're going to get him into a situation where somebody might be willing to look at him. If it doesn't work, at least you can say, you know what, we put him in the best possible situation to succeed. And, you know, if I was the Canucks and I was Gagner, my goals would be very similar here.
Yeah, it feels that way. You're absolutely right. We're 11 days away from that William Nylander deadline. Any movement?
Not as far as I can tell. Not contract-wise. I mean, we'll see if this ends up being a bridge deal at the end, but I don't see anything as far as I can tell. And I'm really curious about trade partners too. I think there's a few teams interested, but I think Toronto knows it's still got a good player and wants to get a lot for him.
And I'm not sure if this team becomes a trade partner or not, but Florida has won 6 of 8 games, but last night they lose Vinny Trocheck. That was an awful-looking injury. Could they package something together, or do they just not have the assets to make this happen?
My question with Florida is not the assets, it's how much do they want to pay them. You know, if you take a look at their guys, they've got a lot of good long-term contracts signed there. You know, Barkov is just under $6 million. You know, Huberto's in the same area. You know, if this is a guy who's looking between 7 and 8, maybe settling in the 7 or low 7s, that's going to be more than your best players. And I could see some teams being resistant of that. So to me, I think Florida probably could do it. I think they would have some pieces Toronto would want, but I'm not sure that salary-wise that's what the Panthers would want to do.
Can you see them targeting someone else? Is there anyone else for them to target? Because Florida feels like it's in a situation, Elliot, where it's been too many years of, oh, well, this happened, so we didn't make it this time, and that there's a real urgency might be the wrong word, but a real push to have something happen this season.
I agree with that. I think there's a lot of pressure there. I think they feel it. You know, Luongo, for example, wasn't supposed to come back in Finland, and when they lost that first game, he charged back and played the second one, and he basically single-handedly put them back in the playoff hunt even early in the year. So, yes, I do think there's a lot of internal pressure there. I would not be surprised at all if they're looking around pretty seriously. But, you know, Trocheck's going to be a hard guy to replace. It's going to be hard to find somebody who can do what that guy did without really subtracting from your team. So, you know, you're looking at losing Trocheck, and then you're looking at losing whatever you have to lose to get him back or something like him back. And that's, you know, there's not a lot of teams that can do that. I think it's going to be very hard for them to do that and pay the salary that Nylander is going to be asking. But I do believe that Florida is looking at this year as, we've got to get there or there could be consequences.
Speaking of losing, the Penguins did it again last night despite having a 4-1 lead on Buffalo. Any idea who the Pens are kicking tires on right now?
Yeah, I think name it. You know, I think that I do think that they have called just about everybody, seeing what they can do. I've said from the beginning, I think Anaheim's a team that makes some degree of sense. But the problem with the Ducks is they have a lot of guys who've got no move clauses and no trade clauses. Like, for example, one guy, you know, a couple guys I could see there making sense for Pittsburgh with Anaheim, Silverberg, unsigned for next year, maybe even a guy like Cogliano. Now, Cogliano's got some trade protection. You know, Silverberg, what kind of asset are you going to want to give up for a guy who might not sign with you? But I do believe Anaheim's got some guys that Pittsburgh would definitely look at.
Sounds like Matt Duchene and the Senators are getting pretty close. Long-term deal getting done in Ottawa?
I'm actually hearing very different things on that.
Really?
Yes. I've heard that they're getting close. I've heard that it's way too soon to say. One thing I can tell you is that the biggest question there is going to be structure. If you look at a lot of these contracts now that top players have received, there's bonuses. And there's going to be a question about whether or not Ottawa wants to do those bonuses. But, you know, I've heard some of the same things that you said, that you just said. But I've also had people say, not so fast, it's premature. So I'll let that one play out, but I do believe contract structure, Scott, is going to be the main issue.
I do wonder, Elliot, at what point of this season, and it's probably not until the calendar flips over to 2019, but I do wonder when names like Matt Duchene, if they're not signed, Stone, if he's not signed there as well, guys in Columbus like Bobrovsky and Panarin, when they actually become in play as opposed to, nope, we're going to see if we can make this thing work.
Well, probably depends on, you know, where Ottawa is in the standings. That's, you know, that's number one. That's usually the number one thing is, you know, is your team still in it? And Ottawa's going to have incentive to stay in it as long as they can. You know, they're 4 points out right now. The season's hardly over. You've got Boston in front of you that's going to have some injury questions. You're not throwing in the towel yet. So I think you're probably looking into the new year to see where you are. And you're also looking at what the demands are. Obviously, you know, the fact that it got out that it's 8x8 or 8x9, that says to me that they kind of know what it's going to cost them for Duchesne. Stone's going to be the bigger one because he's going to get a bigger number. He's their best player. He's their most important player. That's going to be the one that I think is going to be the bigger challenge. But I think if you're Ottawa, you're going for it if you're close. Because now it's been proven you just have to get into the playoffs. That's what you got to do. And that's a team that is thinking very much like we have to sell tickets. We have to get people into the building. I think as long as they're in the race, they're going to keep staying at it.
Not to bring this all back to William Nylander every time, but Stone's an interesting one because it does make you wonder. Patrick Laine was in town here last night. We have the Brock Besser conversation here, and you can go around the league and look at these RFAs contracts that are coming up. I know Stone's a different example, but how much are these agents looking at the William Nylander deal as setting the baseline for their asks?
I think a lot. 100%, I believe it's a lot. And I don't think it's a big coincidence of the fact that none of these guys have signed yet, Scott. Why sign if you're going to be under the Nylander bar? So I think there's a lot to be said for guys are waiting to see what he does. You know, Stone, you're right, is different. You can't compare. That's apples to oranges. He's an unrestricted free agent. His number in most cases is going to be higher. However, if you were a Laine, if you were a Rantanen, if you were a Sebastian Aho, why wouldn't you wait to see what Nylander does? Because a lot of these guys have comparable, if not better, numbers. And if that's the case, you're going to want to see, why not take advantage of his number if it's bigger than you thought?
Completely agree with you, Elliot. Great stuff as always, and this is a great day for you. You didn't have to talk to Andrew Walker.
Yes, that is very true. It is a great day. Unfortunately, last night I had to look at him.
Well, that's your choice. You know you can change your channel.
That's right.
Always a pleasure, Elliot. Have a great night, buddy, at your charity function.
All right, take care, Scotty. See you later.
Sportsnet 650.